thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Did that sound like me snoring? That was supposed to be me snoring. Hi, it's John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Let's cut away to America. Last night around, oh, I say 7:30, 8 o'clock. Hi! We're here till 3 o'clock on weekdays and Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 12 noon on social media. I'm WGN King John. I was going to tweet a lot last night, and then I thought, no, I'm just going to watch this game and let it come to me. Just feel it like an average American. The Super Bowl is a near-perfect summary of us, isn't it? The best teams in our most popular sport playing on our favorite medium with performances by our favorite singers and TV commercials with our favorite products, some featuring our favorite TV stars, puppies, and horses. That's who we are. We watch this eating our favorite foods, drinking our favorite beverages with some of our favorite family and friends, even though I didn't get invited to the Bertrands. In the process, we salute our flag as our fighter jets fly overhead, and we cut away to our troops serving overseas.
Oh, it was fun.
Our president is featured in a pre-game interview, and we gamble on every element of the enterprise, including how long it will take Gladys Knight to sing the national anthem. More about that in a minute. All the while, we connect and talk and snipe and laugh and comment on the whole thing with our favorite devices. 3 hours later, we go home. If aliens came down from space and said, we've only got a few hours, when would be a good time to drop by? You could give them the time for the opening kickoff and feel pretty good that they'd have a sense of who we are. Doesn't mean it was a good game. Doesn't mean Maroon 5 was any good. Worse yet, the production is cooked up by the evil empire that is the NFL. So there's a lot not to like, starting with any and all shots of Bill Belichick, the fake crowd of fans with their hands in the air cheering on the halftime singers, the cutaways to the owner's suites, the fact that this game featured the most boring of all quarterbacks in history and that the Patriots won. The people of Boston had gone 96 heartbreaking days since their last world championship when the Red Sox won the World Series and now this. But the ads were better than I thought they were going to be. The NFL spot featuring the old and new stars tearing up a banquet hall as they scrambled for the loose football, that was delightful. You agree with me on that, Steve? You saw that commercial? And who wasn't touched by the Verizon first responders ads? Google reminded us that the most translated words or phrases are, how are you, thank you, and I love you. Go species. That's nice. The ad for Bubbly that featured Michael Bublé, that was a lot of fun. And they had those Geico ads for Hump Day. Any TV show that has that camel walking around saying, what day is it, is okay by me.
I think of you now every time I see that commercial.
I love that commercial.
Well, you remind me of a camel, that was why. But
oh, it's really, I'm the guy walking around going, Stevie, 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 what day is it?
What day is it? What day is it?
The Microsoft ad featuring the kids who use the adaptive controller to play video games was just terrific. A little 9.5-year-old boy. Elif, do you have the Microsoft ad featuring the kids that are using the game controller? Play that for us for just a second, because that little 9.5-year-old kid, I want to do something nice for him.
My name is Owen, and I am 9.5 years old.
I only have one.
And, yeah.
I love video games, my friends, my family, and again, video games.
Whenever I play it.
You know how we don't like video games? We think video games, we play too much time, waste too much time playing video games. I want those kids to play video games. Never thought about how difficult it would be for a kid who doesn't have 10 fingers or 10 toes to play the games everybody else is. Microsoft's developed an adaptive controller so the kids can. And when you think about all of the times that you've seen everybody screaming on the sofa or clutching their fists because they've won some video game, you don't see a kid in a wheelchair or a kid with three limbs doing that, maybe because they can't. And then you saw that in this commercial and you thought, what a unique and wonderful vision to see, right? The kids can't hit home runs and run around the bases necessarily, but here they were playing on a level playing field with everybody else. I love the Bud Light Dilly Dilly campaign. Although I didn't get the amazing Game of Thrones ad that they did, right? How was it in Bud Light's interest to have the Game of Thrones dragons destroy their night? I don't think I'm overthinking this. There was a mashup of Game of Thrones and Bud Light in the same commercial. The Dilly Dilly Castle people, and here comes the Game of Thrones dragon. It was amazing. So I guess that was a commercial for both of them. But it looks to me like the Bud Light guy got barbecued, and to me that's not good for Bud Light. It was the same way with the Burger King ad, where they had the vintage footage of Andy Warhol eating a Burger King burger with ketchup. I mean, I get it, I think, but he did not look like he was enjoying that sandwich. And it didn't look very good. And there was nothing, it was really obtuse. Maybe it's supposed to be clever, but it was too clever for its own good, right? That just didn't make any sense. My expectations for the halftime show were so low that I was not disappointed. I don't understand everybody beating up on Maroon 5. I mean, that's what those shows look like. And that's Maroon 5. They're fine. They're really good. But what were they supposed to do? Right? I mean, they could have, I guess, declined the invitation, but that's Maroon 5. And he wore some swell shirts. He's got a lot of tattoos. Some people were sort of preoccupied with certain parts of his anatomy. That's whatever. John, I didn't watch a minute of the Super Bowl. Yeah, sorry. I mean, I know. Look, put it this way. More people yesterday did not watch the Super Bowl than did. Think about that.
I forgot that it was on until there was 6 minutes left in the third quarter.
You don't work for a news talk radio station by any chance, do you?
I know, right?
It's kind of in the water. But right, if it's not your thing, it's not your thing. I mean, I have plenty of friends who I know didn't watch the Super Bowl. And remember, more Americans do not than do.
Oh, John, I'll tell you, we had so much fun at my party that I don't like Super Bowl parties because...
He's rubbing it in.
Oh, just a little bit.
Because you end up... I really almost saw none of the game.
Because you were hosting?
Yeah.
Walking around, getting extra chips and visiting with people, that
but really,
sort of thing.
It looked, I had a best friend from high school, a couple best friends from now, a college roommate. We had so much fun and...
All right.
I mean, that sounds like every Super Bowl party during my 20s. Yeah. I just don't remember them.
And you know, at the end of the night, I said, Sharon, we would have had room for John and Brendan.
Yeah, how about that?
But honestly, I had a wonderful time, but I really didn't see...
Okay, Steve.
No, but wait, I didn't see any of the game, and I kind of regret that.
All right, you hosted a party. I didn't. I was also not invited to a party, as it turns out, at your house. But this is a question. Because I noticed on Twitter some people were saying that everybody left at halftime. It was such a boring game.
Yeah.
Is that bad form? There you are. The Bertrands put on a party. Everybody shows up. You're eating his food and drinking his booze. And then because the game's not good, you leave? Now, maybe, you know, you've got babysitters or you've got plans and everybody understands that. But, I mean, it's not Steve and Sharon's fault that the game is boring.
We only had half the crowd by the end of the game.
Really?
Less than half of the crowd.
And how do you feel about that?
I don't think, well, first of all, no one was watching the game. So they weren't leaving because the game was boring. I think it's a Sunday night thing.
Yeah.
You know, you go for a while. And I don't think you should feel obligated. I mean... No, it didn't bother me at all.
That's like responsible adulting. You go for a little bit, you make an appearance, you go home, and you still show up for work the next day.
Yeah. 1 in 8 people did not today. 1 in 8 people do not show up for work the next day.
Wow.
They're actually talking about, there was a conversation last week, should we declare Election Day a federal holiday? Some people think that the day after the Super Bowl should be a national holiday. Maybe we could vote this day then. I don't know, mash them up. I don't know how that'll all work. Maybe today could be Columbus Day, too. Drop something else in there.
You're always going at the Italians.
My number is 312-981-7200. Your observations, questions, or comments about the game or the commercials. I watched a lot of the commercials beforehand, and I just didn't think they were all that swell. But
I think that's what's changed.
I'm touched by a lot of them. Where they used to be raucous and funny and sexy, now they're thoughtful. Right?
Well,
I think they're good that way.
My point was going to be, it used to be when we were kids, you had to watch the Charlie Brown Christmas on the day CBS showed it.
Yeah.
So, and you know, and now you can watch these ads before and after and during, so there's not the same sort of stress to sit there and watch the commercials either anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Sort of the big reveal is lost because you may have seen some of them in advance anyway.
Or there's no, even if it's not lost, there's no pressure to see it then because you can watch it tomorrow if you want.
Yeah, that's the way it was with Gladys Knight singing the national anthem. I missed it. I was somewhere else. I walked into the room as she was finishing up, and Brenda said, "Do you want me to rewind it?" And I said, "Nah, I'll watch it tomorrow. I'll catch the national anthem tomorrow." I watched it today, and it was lovely. Did you catch the controversy about that?
No.
Okay. No.
It was
really?
As if I wasn't there. Why?
Here's what I got from you just now. Do we have to turn everything into a controversy? Can't we just let the lady sing the damn song?
Here's what I was thinking of saying, John. I would love next year to say, okay, post-Super Bowl, we are only going to talk about the positive parts.
Okay.
Because everyone, you know, they just, every Monday after the Super Bowl, and no matter how great the game was, like last year was a great game, but everyone's complaining about something about it.
CBS doesn't control it. The NFL doesn't control it. They would if they could, trust me. 6 points scored over an almost entire Super Bowl is, you know, underperforming. But it is what it is. And, you know, I have quibbles with the production values, the halftime show and stuff like that, but you know, it was fine.
Yeah, in the end, who cares?
Right, that's the thing. Nobody got cancer here. We're all right. Okay, but still, there is today, Mr. Newsman, a raging controversy about the national anthem last night. I'll play for you the part that is most controversial next. Of the Brave again. So the closing lines of our national anthem of Land of the Free and the Home of the Brave. And then she gave you one more, Home of the Brave. There was one of those prop bets. How long will Gladys Knight take to sing the national anthem? And the number was like 1:49. When she said, for the Land of the Free and the Home of the Brave, it was at 1:49. And then she lapped on that extra Land of the Free, Home of the Brave, and it went over. So what's the correct score on how long the national anthem took? Do you stop it after Land of the Free, Home of the Brave, or do you continue with the second time she said, of the brave? Because then it goes over. One's under, one's over the line. And millions of dollars are at stake on this. I don't, as they say, have a dog in this hunt, so I'm okay either way. And I don't know how prop bets even live in a world that is so susceptible to corruption. Because they could have slipped Gladys some money on the side. Or they could have said, hey, Gladys, I've got $1 million on you going over 1:49. So if you come in at under 1:49, would you just throw on one more line, Land of the Free, Home of the Brave, 1:49 of the Brave, and then I make $1 million. Same with the color of the Gatorade. Same with anything that an individual could manipulate knowing what the odds are on the field.
What day is the Super Bowl next year? Because I think I'm going to take that Monday off.
I find this fascinating.
Do you really?
Well,
you don't think that's really possible, do you?
I do know that the controversy I just described is legit. And that at least one of the bookies, one of the agencies is having to pay both ways. They're just giving everybody their money because... But it's impossible to say.
How is it impossible to say? She sang the song, and when
the song ended, when you sing a Land of the Free and the Home of the Brave,
not when the music ends.
Well, the song is the Land of the Free, the Home of the Brave, not the Land of the Free, the Home of the Brave of the Brave. You can do whatever you want. What if she read the San Francisco phone book? That would go longer as well, but that's not the song.
Well, if she ended reading the San Francisco phone book with of the Brave, then that would count.
Well, somebody suddenly vested in this conversation. Somebody finds this more interesting than he thought.
I'm not picking on you. I know it sounds like it, but...
Why really would not... I get that, Steve? No, I didn't go to your party.
Oh, you know, I got a note from Lou. He left his hat.
Let's take a call besides Steve. Brian, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. What's on your mind, sir?
I lived in the Chicago area back in the early 80s, and friends of ours had a Super Bowl party each year, and it was always a lot of fun socializing, et cetera.
Yeah.
But then in 85, when the Bears were in the Super Bowl, it was the most boring party because everybody was watching the Bears. And I'm a Packer fan. I live in Wisconsin now.
You should have led with that, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that the 85 game was actually boring. It was never in doubt. I mean, it was. I said that to my father-in-law, and he almost disowned me. The 85 game was great. It was fun. Refrigerator scored. Did Walter Payton score a touchdown in the Super Bowl?
No, famously not.
So we got this. That was really the only.
The fridge scored, right?
I know. So there's that. But, I mean, that was kind of a boring game.
But, see, you know, this is my point. You know this is my point, right?
Thank you for the call, Brian. I appreciate you jumping in. What's that, Steve?
You're egging me on now.
What did I do?
That after the Bears won the Super Bowl, you were complaining that it was a boring game. Well, that's what we do on this Monday is we complain about stuff.
I think I'm just making cogent observations.
I have a Wes Bleed, who used to work here, will tell you that the Bears didn't play a good game that day, he says.
847. I think the Gladys Knight National Anthem was one of the best ever. It really was. She looked lovely. She did lovely. The best ever will and always will be Lady Gaga from last year. Gaga was just 2016, Olive. That was fantastic. But Gladys Knight, wow, you were the highlight of the game. That tweet went out early. Gladys Knight wins the Super Bowl. Wendy Snyder called or texted into this fine radio station, our colleague here, and she said that the national anthem ends when Gladys stops singing. Is that the read on that, Steve Bertrand?
I think there was another word in there, too, but it was like end of story or something, yes.
So she's really enjoying the show? Is that what she's telling us?
She says it's over when she stops singing, end of conversation.
So they say over 100 million people watched, or no, just a little under 100 million people watched the Super Bowl. Can you name the TV show that had more than 100 million people and wasn't a football game? What was the one TV show episode that had more than 100 million viewers? The final episode of Seinfeld had 76 million. Final episode of Cheers had 84 million.
And it wasn't a sporting event?
It was a non-sporting event, although 49 of the top 50 most viewed television programs of all time.
Was it an episodic TV show? I mean, it wasn't like, okay.
Let me just read this last sentence, though. In a fragmenting market and amid declining audiences for traditional television viewing across the board, football remains king. In 2018, 46 of the 50 most watched telecasts were NFL games. That's not of all time. But last year, 50 most watched TV shows or telecasts, 46 of them were NFL games. That's what we do.
That's amazing.
The most watched TV show episode of all time, Steve?
Did you say MASH?
Final episode of MASH. Ding, 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 ding.
Really?
105 million people. And that was a long time ago. There were fewer folks back then.
You know, I was in college trying to be a college TV newsman.
Yeah.
And we did a story on it. And I never saw the show. Because I was out like going to MASH parties from back, you know, getting video and everything. And back then, again, you couldn't watch it on demand 2 days later or something.
Which skews everything, right? Because the viewing for the Super Bowl, you have households, not people, and you also have devices. It was on all the CBS platforms, so you might have been able to watch it without actually being a Nielsen family. But that's what they're saying. By the way, we do have a new news click as we now segue to just a couple of quick political topics to keep you up. Producer Elif, the new news click, please. Can you run that by us?
Yes, it is. Should Virginia Governor Ralph Northam resign? Yes or no?
Yes or no. Should he resign? Yes or no? Lord, yes. Ask me a hard one. Rick Pearson joins us from WGN Radio, Sunday morning, 7 to 9. You read him in the Chicago Tribune, too. Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Do you want to opine on that? Should Northam resign?
Well, I'll tell you, it's amazing that he's trying to hang in there despite all the pressure, not just in Virginia, a state where Democrats, you know, are really trying to make a big push to control the state and the damaging effects that has on Virginia Democrats as well. Both the House and Senate Democrats and the legislature have called on him to resign. But just the national calls as well. And then, you know, that you go from the Friday when I'm sorry I was in the photo to Saturday's press conference where now that wasn't me in the photo. It seems like it's a difficult tightrope that he's trying to hang on to here.
I'll play a clip from that. In fact, Elif, give me a thumbs up when you have the clip of the governor from Saturday. Just to clarify that point, can you play that, Elif? This is Governor Northam. This is his Saturday press conference where he tried to explain why it is that he wasn't sure about who was in that video. Yeah, hit it.
When my staff showed me the photo in question yesterday, I was seeing it for the first time. I did not purchase the EVMS yearbook, and I was unaware of what was on my page. When I was confronted with the images yesterday, I was appalled that they appeared on my page, but I believe then and now that I am not either of the people in that photo.
Well, then he shouldn't have addressed it to begin with. I mean, good grief. But then to make clear, because, you know, he doesn't want any skeletons in his closet to come out now, he did appear in blackface doing Michael Jackson at a dance competition as a 25-year-old in 1984. So the numbers are bad on that. Also makes me wonder who's monitoring yearbooks. Really? Somebody? Hello, the school? Hello, the yearbook producer?
Think of that, man. We were in a time then that got by.
And to say nothing of a sitting member of the United States Supreme Court, was anybody paying any attention to the stuff people put in their yearbooks? It's just stunning. Okay, so that's the national scene. Rick, I called on you, though, to more talk about some of the local things happening here in Chicago. Let's start with the Amara Anya story. How do you say her name again?
Maya Enra.
Here's what Todd Leidy, your colleague at the Chicago Tribune, tweeted out over the weekend. He said, to recap my colleague's work, David Heinzman, the reporter, he said, to recap my colleague's work, a candidate for Chicago mayor failed to report to the IRS one-third of her income, owes the IRS thousands of dollars for unpaid taxes from years past, has been sued for unpaid rent and student loans, and fined for violation of campaign finance rules. The underlying message being there, and she wants to run the city of Chicago. What's going to happen to her? How damaging is this, Rick?
Well, that's a very good question because, you know, she's billing herself and with her support from Chance the Rapper and Kanye West, this viewed as this kind of new generational candidate. And what the Tribune found, what my colleagues found, are, you know, this is very serious. I mean, we're talking about managing a city that's in fiscal chaos. You know, how well can you manage your own finances? But does that message, does that kind of warning, does that sound to this generation, the millennial generation that she's appealing to? I don't know. A lot of them find themselves in their own financial straits. A lot of them, issues such as high student debt loads, those kinds of things. The other factor to consider here, too, is that while we did see a tremendous number of youth voting in the midterm elections in November, once again, we're dealing with a mayoral aldermanic cycle where voter turnout is much less than you find in a midterm or a presidential election. And it's a matter of, you know, who those voters are that come out to vote. But certainly, you know, from the facts laid out, when you're looking at a city that faces this huge pension crisis, this pension cliff that we're kind of going on, the fact of ever-increasing property taxes, needs a way to restructure ways that we address things like education and crime. With all of those on the table, if you can't manage your own finances, can you do the city's finances?
Well, that's the question I'm turning over in my head. I want my mayor to be competent and honest, and I don't know what this says about her honesty, and I wonder if the competency issue is translatable. Can you be totally screwed up in your personal finances, but a good steward, say, of the city? Of the second question, I think it's possible you could. Of the first question, I think that's kind of problematic. I mean, it wasn't just that she got into some debt, but she didn't report a third of her income? Oh, she forgot, or it was a bookkeeping thing? Hello? Really?
Yeah, and you know, here again, we're also in this age where we talk about increasingly about the need for transparency.
Yeah.
And the need of the public officials to be transparent. This does not fall into those lines. You're not even being transparent with the amount you owe.
Speaking of transparency.
Yes.
So let me see if I've got this right. Okay, this is where my head is following the City Hall developments. There's a developer called Si Wong, S-E-E. He's a guy in Chinatown who is trying to help coordinate a development, including a hotel. He ran into some financial troubles himself, and it sounds like he was asked to wear a wire. He recorded conversations around Alderman Danny Solis. They had all sorts of embarrassing things then on Solis because Wong was recording conversations. But rather than settle with that, the feds told Solis, we'll make a lot of this go away, and boy, is it a lot, if yes. you'll wear a wire on the likes of an Ed Burke. Who knows, maybe Mike Madigan calls. Is that what's happened so far?
Sure. And what we've always seen, and we've seen this from high-profile investigations in the past, conducted by the feds, of kind of the ladder climbing that is done, where you start with somebody like the developer, you move ahead to Danny Solis, who, you know, now we know there's like 18,000 conversations that were recorded by the feds.
And that's not a rhetorical term. It's 18,000 conversations.
Correct. And, you know, here's Solis in a rapidly changing, rapidly pro-development kind of ward where you're going to get lots of developer interest. At the same time, you're head of the zoning committee, so you're naturally going to have affiliations with virtually every alderman on the city council. Part of that is, of course, the aldermanic privilege that exists that allows individual aldermen to control development within their wards. You take those kind of combinations together, and certainly you see the potential that I'm sure the Fed saw with one, you know, look, there's plenty of stuff they could just go after Danny Solis and shut the door. But that's not what they chose to do. And so, yeah, I think there's going to be a much more continued fallout. Obviously, you know, we saw Burke and a complaint, one charge complaint, by the way. You know, is there more that exists there with Burke and his power, as well as the fact of his tax appeal law firm? The Madigan revelations that the Sun-Times did were interesting, but in and of themselves, really not any issue of,
right.
of criminality, because
okay.
what the feds are looking for is quid pro quo. You do this, I do that, and it's kind of cash for exchange for official action. And that's really what the magic elixir is that the feds are looking for.
Well, Mike Madigan's the biggest fish of them all, and I want to talk about that after a quick break here. But Danny Solis has not been charged with a crime, right?
Correct.
So I don't know that means he won't be charged, but if that sticks, that is, if he's never charged with a crime, what a shameful and embarrassing way to go down, A, and what a lucky guy he is, B, because they had all kinds of stuff on him, and this is a guy that's got to face his constituents, his wife, and his kids, good Lord. I'm not sure that I'm entirely comfortable with the idea that he shouldn't be prosecuted for something. This is the problem.
Well, and typically what does happen, and we've even seen this in kind of the Robert Mueller and the special counsel investigation, is for cooperating witnesses or whatever, they are sentenced with something, but will be given great deal of latitude in sentencing because of their cooperation with the government. So it's entirely likely we could see Solis charged with some kind of minor federal offense, and that it would amount to basically, because of his cooperation, it would amount to being on parole.
The other angle on this is the Mike Madigan story, and he's slippery, and if you had to bet right now, it looks like he might get away with it again, but we know very little about what the feds have on Mike Madigan. But the Sun-Times also has a story today about Danny Solis and how other aldermen behaved in a curious way, and I want to get your take on that in just a second. We're visiting with Rick Pearson. You read him in the Chicago Tribune, and you hear him Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. Ran down the hall.
That was you I heard running down the hall? I didn't realize. I'm sorry. I would have said something.
Wearing really heavy boots and looking for my phone because I'm expecting an important text. And well, anyway, we digress. Hey, while you are waiting for spring, it says here, while you're waiting for spring, you can pretend it's spring and visit the Old House, New House Home Show in St. Charles. That's this weekend, February 8th, 9th, and 10th, where you can find patio furniture that requires no painting. Ooh, that's a good idea. Staining or storing for decades. That's the patio furniture. Be with you in just a sec. You think that a man in the kind of shape I'm in?
Yeah. This is a really, you want me to look for your phone?
You would think that a guy in the kind of shape I'm in, maybe this is the kind of shape I'm in, would be able to run down the hall and not lose his breath.
There's an excitement that comes with it, too, that takes your breath away. I think that's part of it. You'll be fine.
It's maintenance-free outdoor furniture from By the Yard.
Oh, wait a minute.
Check out their showrooms in Vernon Hills and Yorktown Center, or visit their booth at the Old House, New House Home Show this weekend only. Find your forever furniture at buytheyard.net.
Can you see me in the monitor?
I can.
Look,
and that's my phone.
I'm holding your phone.
Was it in that little production bay behind you?
It was. Eric Rung found it.
Thank you, Eric. God bless you, sir.
You want me to read me? You read your text to you?
Let's go back to Rick Pearson. He's our guest, and he's waiting on hold.
I want to hear the text.
Yeah, I would, except that you are even more interesting than my text.
Oh, I don't believe that for a second.
If Pearson writes in the Chicago Tribune, you hear him Sunday mornings on WGN Radio. So there's also this story about a couple of other aldermen, actually three or four, right?
Right.
Okay, so here's what happens. There's a lawyer, and sometimes describes him as a political power broker, named Victor Reyes. Can you kind of fill me in on the Reyes version of events?
Well, sure. Victor Reyes is a political power broker. In fact, he was the one who helped establish for Rich Daley, the Hispanic Democratic Organization, which amounted to really kind of a machine for Latino aspiring politicians and volunteers to really kind of get into the patronage game in city politics. And that's long dismantled. But Victor is an attorney, remains a powerhouse. According to the affidavit from the Sun-Times, that Reyes complained that while these other aldermen, three other aldermen or so were in the story, Latino aldermen who they referred legal business to Victor Reyes, an attorney, and Reyes would give them
campaign
fundraising donations.
Yeah, so here's Reyes. He's in between, right? So he's not on the city council, but he donates to city councilmen. He's connected to a lot of groups and businesses in town, and he has his own law business. He would love it if these aldermen would funnel business his way, sort of the way you might suspect Ed Burke or Mike Madigan of getting business funneled their way, but he's not on the city council. But he's asking
right.
for business, and now he's shaking Solis down a little bit, and he's saying, hey, how come I'm not getting any business from you? And Solis is kind of promising him, saying, yeah, I'll get you some business.
Yeah, Solis wanted Victor Reyes to have a fundraiser for him. And Reyes said, well, you haven't gotten me any business. These other guys got me business, but you didn't get me any business. Why should I throw you a fundraiser? Now, I will say this. In the story, when you look at the amounts of money that these other aldermen who were named for steering business to Reyes, when you look at the amount of the fundraising dollars that Reyes paid them, it's not a lot of money over a long period of time. It's not a lot of money.
$3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000.
Yeah, but when you talk about kind of, you know, if this is one person, Victor Reyes, you know, what kind of steering is going on with others, especially in a legal community that is very good about spreading around campaign donations?
Well, I guess 30 seconds on this, but I don't know what the solution is, because the other aldermen are saying, if people ask me, hey, do you know an attorney? Yeah, I will reference him, but I don't say you have to, and there's no penalty if you don't. And by the way, he is connected. He is a good guy to know. So what did we do wrong again? But it sure looks bad. It looks like a quid pro quo.
It looks like a quid pro quo, but again, there is no kind of defined quid pro quo. You look at the fact with the Blagojevich's conviction, where there was the quid pro quo of shaking down a children's hospital in exchange for legislation, shaking down the horse track industry in exchange for acting on legislation. There you have an established quid pro quo. Here, there's no real official act identified in exchange for money.
These tapes are going to reveal all sorts of secrets, or maybe put light on things that people have suspected or known all along. It's a fascinating conversation. Read about it in the Chicago Tribune and listen for Rick Pearson Sunday mornings on WGN. Thanks for your time, Rick.
Thank you, John.
It's always nice to hear your voice, sir, and read your words.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Here I is. It's 210 on WGN. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We'll be here till 3.
Lord have mercy.
Saturdays 10 to noon on social media. Look for WGN King John. That's me, WGN King John, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We're kind of busy there, you know. Steve, Saturday, Brenda and I went to see Green Book.
Oh, good. What'd you think?
I thought it was terrific.
Yeah.
Sunday morning, I picked up the Chicago Tribune, and there was a really good piece in the A&E section on the front page of that section by Christopher Borelli at the Tribune, and it's headlined this, big letters. Am I a bad person if I liked Green Book?
See, I think I mentioned that to you or someone, right? There's some blowback on it.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I can see why. I mean,
really?
It's a fairly sanitized version of the awfulness of the civil rights era, of the crisis, of the... Here's a guy who's a world-class pianist, and he's traveling through the South, and he's not able to stay in the hotels or eat in the restaurants that the whites are. It's that story, and it's very palatable, and it has a nice ending, and it's just kind of a happy, pretty story.
Yeah.
And the truth of it isn't all of that.
Well... So I don't know everything that they're... I think the Mahershala Ali's character, his family, says that he was misportrayed a little bit, right? And that they're...
Mahershala Ali played the pianist that we're talking about.
Right. And then there's the whole white savior thing as if... But I don't think that there was a white savior in there. I think the African-American was the savior in many ways in this story.
I don't care. I mean, I get it. That's where that conversation is. That's the controversy.
Okay, good. That's what I thought was the controversy.
But I'm telling you that in the viewing of it, the audience I was watching was laughing and sighing, and there was sadness, there was humor. There was applause at the end of the movie. It's just a really good movie.
Yeah, it really is a good movie. And, I mean, who knew that a Green Book existed? You know, that was the directory of hotels that African-Americans were welcome in the South in the 60s.
And I get how it soft-pedals the awfulness of that. This wasn't a movie to hard-sell the awfulness of that. This was a happy, fun movie that told the story of the driver and the musician.
But there's a lot of awfulness in it.
You and I are on the same page, my friend. I think there is. They could have made it grimier or grittier or worse. I don't know. But to me, here's the way Brenda and I talked about this on our walk home from the theater. And I said, if I have grown in my understanding, like, I know it was worse than that, right? But this wasn't a story about all of the worst parts of it. This was a story about this, and I've grown in my understanding that there was a Green Book, that there were families like this, that there were real characters, that these are actual people.
I'm embarrassed. I did not know that there...
A Green Book?
No, but that there were towns where a black man could legally not be out after sunset.
I think I knew that because in some cities, those towns still those signs, you know, you can find those signs.
I didn't.
Okay, well, there's that. I mean, yeah. So every little thing that you now know that you didn't because you saw the show, I think is a benefit to us. Trust me, nobody comes out of that movie going, well, I'll finish this sentence and then you can disagree with it. Nobody comes out of that movie going, what do you know? Blacks weren't treated badly in the South in the 60s and 50s, right? I mean, you don't get a happy feeling about the treatment that Mahershala Ali's character got.
Yeah, no, I hadn't heard the criticism that it soft-pedaled that too much because I thought it was I thought there was a lot of that in there.
Well, that's the undercurrent, but I guess it could have been worse. And there's the white savior complex, if you will. But I think the fact that it has a nice happy ending and that it is a story that's relatively true made it a really interesting, fun movie. But there was his piece, and Christopher Borelli wrote at length, not just about this, but about a lot of movies. I mean, he even brought your Bohemian Rhapsody into there, producer Elif. And, you know, people are critical of that movie. It's not the true telling of it's their version, blah, blah, blah. I went to a movie. In fact, that's kind of the point. Is it okay to just go to a movie and like the movie for its flaws?
Well, it's hard if the movie is portraying itself as an account of, you know.
Tell me the movie that's a true telling of any story.
Right.
Shame on us if we think, oh, now I know. You do not know.
It's funny that I feel a little differently about the Queen retelling than I do the Green Book retelling, because maybe I'm more familiar with the Queen story or something.
Have you seen Vice? You think that's the
no, but
okay, but that's somebody's
right.
view of Dick Cheney and right. George Bush. I'll bet the Cheneys aren't loving that. I'll bet they're going, oh, it wasn't really like that. Oh, I bet they're. You know that book by the what's Cliff's last name, producer Elif, that guy whose book I'm reading?
Klavan?
Yeah, no. Elif's not even listening to us right now. But there's a book out by one of
One of the Trump guys?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I'm reading that.
He's ripping the fact that the Trump administration is a leaky administration, and he's writing the book, which is kind of funny to me.
Right. Okay, so this guy has all sorts of problems with Donald Trump down the road, but walking into that room, he was working for Trump. He was in the war room the night of the election. He was in the war room the night that they all found out that Access Hollywood had tapes of the president and Billy Bush. So he kind of walks you through all of that. He you know, we're a lot of reporters, we wonder, how did they get that? He was in the room. He was the social media director or the assistant social media director for Donald Trump. He was there, right? And he is looking at Bob Woodward's book. And then he points out, we read Bob Woodward's book. We talked about it and some of these amazing scenes. We've read all of the books that have come out about the Trump administration. Now, who are you going to believe, the reporters or the commentators or somebody that's in the room but is an advocate for the president anyway? There's a couple of classic scenes in Woodward's book. And this guy, Cliff Klavan, he says, that's a fiction. It's a complete fabrication. He says, why would Bob Woodward make up that story or report it without sufficient, say, fact-checking? Because it's categorically not true. We were there. Now, who are you going to believe? The article in the Tribune says what we do to people, though, when they advocate for or enjoy a movie, say a movie with some flaws, say a book with some flaws, is that we attach that failure to the person that likes the movie. So if the movie is not sufficiently hard on the civil rights movement, and you like the movie, then we judge you to be insufficiently appreciative of the plight of African Americans in the 1950s. And you're like, no, don't do that to me. I just went to a show. We ate popcorn, for crying out loud. What did I do wrong? John, I watched Roma with my wife and a bunch of friends. I had to run out to the hardware store to get more rope. Yuck, it was terrible. John, I found $10 in the melting snow today. It's one of those days where you will find things. John,
that's the best thing I've heard found.
Yeah, I know, because mostly what I'm finding in my hood ain't that. John, Naperville took the law preventing blacks from being in town after sunset off their books in 1979. It was one of those dormant laws they never fixed. I don't know that I believe that. That's worth double-checking, but that's what it says here. From a 630 texter, that some of the towns, even in Naperville, still had that on the books as recently as 1979. Okay, let's do this one. The news click at WGNradio.com is, should the governor of Virginia resign? I want your calls now, 312-981-7200. Call 312-981-7200 or text to 312-981-7200. That's our web poll question. We call it a news click. Should Governor Northam resign?
The correct answer is yes.
But you get to respond now. I want to hear from you. Lots of text, 2847. King John, the Virginia Governor yearbook issue does not merit a resignation. 630, back in the 80s, we had a costume party at church. And I had a lovely sari my dad brought home from a business trip to India. I have pale skin and had dark hair then, so I put on dark foundation to complete the look. It was another 10 years when I mentioned this to some Indian co-workers and saw the looks in their eyes and realized I'd unknowingly crossed a line. 224, I'd be interested in the Virginia governor's record on civil rights. Suppose he has been incredibly supportive of minorities. Shouldn't that trump the controversial photo? What do you say? 312-981-7200. An unexpected and lasting side effect of dabbling with drugs, even one time, Dina Bear reports. That's tonight's cover story on WGN-TV News at 9. The Midwestern University Multispecialty Clinic in Downers Grove offers a comprehensive, patient-centered healthcare experience at their dental institute, family medicine clinic, speech-language institute, physical therapy institute, and eye institute. At their clinics, you'll receive exceptional care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Learn more at mwuclinics.com. Or call 630-743-4500, 630-743-4500. Midwestern University Clinic is your family's home for health care. Steve, back to that question one of our listeners asks, and that is, shouldn't that trump the controversial photo?
What's that, John?
I'm just reiterating the question one of our listeners asked, and that is, shouldn't the governor's record trump the controversial photo? What if he's a good governor?
Well,
what if he's a good guy?
But the problem is he admitted it before he said he didn't do it. You know, on Friday he apologized for it, I watched the Saturday news conference and he took a lot of questions. It was incredibly awkward at times. It was a different time, and I'm not going to speak to doing a Michael Jackson impersonation or something, but he kind of made a joke about how it was hard to get shoe polish off your face.
Here's the part that got especially awkward.
You said that the competition in San Antonio was a dance competition?
Yes.
And it was that you danced the moonwalk?
That's right.
Are you still able to moonwalk?
Inappropriate circumstances.
My wife says inappropriate circumstances.
I mean, that's just weird.
Well, what a stupid question.
Yes, it was.
That's somebody just laying bait for the guy, and then he can't answer that without his wife giving him some sort of non sequitur of answer.
He clearly is under the most intense pressure he's ever
man.
Been under. So, you know, I understand all of that. But it's odd, John, that on Friday his statement indicated that the one of the men in the picture was him. He apologized for it, and it's hard to the next day. I mean, I don't think I've ever been in a Ku Klux Klan robe, and if I have, I would have known if my picture was taken, right? It doesn't all make sense. And then he talked about how there were many that he submitted. There were four pictures on that page, and he submitted three of them, but the fourth one might have been put on his page by mistake.
I don't know where his head is.
I don't either, and I want to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. It's such a weird.
Well, let's make the best case scenario for him, because I'm still going to conclude he should leave. That he isn't either of those. That he was totally confused when he saw it and thought the high road would be copping to being one of those, when in fact he was not. And yeah, he was in a dance competition, but it was an innocent, different time, and he had meant no ill will, and it wasn't anybody but Michael Jackson, and he shouldn't have done that. And he was duly elected, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's his best case scenario. He should still resign because other people can do the job. Being governor isn't such an exclusive talent or skill. Ask Illinoisans that somebody else can't step up. Virginia will be better if you're just out of the way and we're done with this episode. Next! I mean, it's not even hard. Now, if he had the cure to cancer.
It's hard if it's something you've worked your whole life
for. It's hard for him. That's all. It's just hard for him. That's what this is. This is such a selfish thing. He could say, wow, I'm getting screwed here. I don't deserve this, but you don't either. I'll step out of the way. I'll still harbor that, but you won't because I won't be around. I mean, he could do that. Doesn't he have a 401k? Go do something else, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's just a matter of time. If he's got everyone encouraging, you know, against him here.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. They had that meeting Sunday night. So there his staff was like, hey, you going to go to the Super Bowl party? Yeah, let's go over to the Super Bowl party. I hear the Bertrands are having a Super Bowl party. And then the governor calls a meeting. And he goes, all right, everybody, we got to meet. And they all got together, and none of them said, yeah, you should stay. They couldn't find any voices for support. So he said, okay, we'll decide later. Okay, yeah, let's do that. Sally, you're on WGN. Hello. Hi, Sally.
Hi, John. I was just calling to say that he sounds much like shades of Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Governor.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. I get it. Thank you for the call, Sally. From you, we go to Paul. You're on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
What should he do?
He should definitely resign. And the thing that troubles me is his retraction to his admission. He keeps saying, I'm not Batman in the photo. Well, when I look out back on my yearbooks, I'm not Batman in that photo either. I'm 30 pounds lighter. It just seems like he's trying to, like, put it off as, well, I don't believe that anymore, or I would never do
right.
anything like that now.
Right.
But at this time, I may have, but I'm not Batman.
I got it. All right, Paul, well put. Thanks for the call. Hey, Barb, you're on WGN. What do you want to say?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
You got to do it on
your... I'll come back to you, Barb. You're that close to being on the radio. Karen, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. If he had just stuck with the apology and said, you know, hey, we all did stupid stuff, then I would have been good with it. But now he needs to step down because he's backtracking. But Angelina Jolie did the same... Is that, that's her name, right? The movie star.
Yeah.
When she played David Perlman's wife, why didn't they get Halle Berry? She's of mixed race. Angelina Jolie painted her face black to play a black woman. It's insane. So what are we talking about here?
Thanks for the call. 815 says, yes, he should resign. But, John, what shocks me the most is that you are not standing up for him. He's a Democrat. 773 says, yes, he should after changing his story. It's the lying. That's interesting, isn't it? What's worse, what he did or the fact that he can't even get his story straight? We go to John on line 5. You're on WGN. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, John. Yeah, I think he should keep his job. I mean, who of us from 30 years ago haven't done anything wrong that we can't have a little redemption for from a clean life that you learn from and grow from? I mean, I look at Prince Harry when he dressed up as a Nazi. Yeah. That was put under the rug after a few weeks.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that. Thanks for the call. 630 said, stupid question. Thank God his wife knew to tell him not to do the moonwalk. Do you get the feeling he was about to break into the moonwalk to demonstrate that, yeah, that was me doing the Michael Jackson thing, not the KKK thing? Said that they were looking for a video on him, and he at least got lucky and didn't give it to him. Hey, Jim, should he resign? You're on WGN. Hi.
How you doing, buddy? I just want to say Blazing Saddles, number one.
I was thinking of Blazing Saddles this week. In fact, Elif, what year did Blazing Saddles come out? I'm just kind of curious. I think it's apples and oranges, but go ahead and finish your comment.
But I'm just saying that Blazing Saddles was had everything bleeped out now, but years ago when it first came out, it wasn't bleeped out. And my other opinion is, how about Al Jolson? Was he dressed up as a colored person?
I think the problem with this is, you know, that there's different eras, there's different contexts, but for some reason I was thinking about Blazing Saddles. And, you know, if a Hollywood movie depicts guys in robes and it's done for comic relief, I don't know. Somehow we have it in our heads that Mel Brooks can do that, but you and I can't. And don't ask me to explain the metrics on it, how that works, but it does. I just think those are different animals. I hope I'm right about that. But I will tell you that when you do go back and watch some movies, you cringe today, and you don't do that today. But at the time, what was the year on that, producer Elif? Elif, what was the year for Blazing Saddles?
1974.
You know, it's interesting how we loosen standards on some things and have tightened standards on others, right? I mean, there are sex scenes in movies now that would have never been in 1974. There's language that would have rarely been used. Or
I wonder if Archie Bunker would have gotten away today with what he used to get away with back then. I mean, really, think about that. Is that not a point, Steve, that you're also making, All in the Family?
Could you have had that show?
I wonder. I'll tell you who's really sensitive to this, because we've lived through it and grown. We've seen the media change and our own words and thoughts change. But our kids have no time for this. If you have a 20-something, they have very little patience for a conversation like this. Am I right about that? I follow Roger Badish on Twitter. You should, too.
Okay, I do.
So he tweets pictures of baseball players and then says this many more days till opening day or spring training or whatever, which is kind of fun. But he also posted this a short while ago. This is amazing, from WGN-TV. For the first time since their original airings over 50 years ago, WGN-TV will air 2 one-hour episodes of Bozo Circus in their entirety in a 2-hour primetime special titled Bozo Circus, the 1960s.
I saw that. It's next Sunday, right?
Sunday, February 17th at 7 p.m. Central.
So 2 Sundays from now.
So I think I will watch that.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Because it's been so long, and you can see clips, but just to watch a Bozo Circus on TV and what that was like and how silly it was and how fun it was and what we all looked like will really be a fun idea. I'm up for that. And, of course, will the kid? I'll bet they picked episodes where the kids get all the prizes on the bucket game.
The grand prize game.
The grand prize game. The grand prize game.
Bucket game.
I was, you know, the night of the last Saturday night when the weather was so bad? Was it Saturday night? Yeah. Where the snow and the cold came in and everything was shutting down.
It was Monday morning, I think, right? Sunday into Monday?
Was that it? Yeah, I think maybe you're right. I know this. So I took the Amtrak train from New Buffalo, Michigan to Union Station that night because I didn't think I could get back in for my Monday or Tuesday show if it was Sunday or Monday night. Anyway, I'm on the Amtrak, and then it was delayed a couple of times, and then it was slow going, and we finally get in, and it's like downtown is cleared out because it's freezing cold and there's some blowing snow, and I found a cab. There's a guy downtown. He was a real character. He was a funny guy. I should tell you someday about the stories this guy's told me. He looked like Santa Claus, but a black Santa Claus, a black Jewish Santa Claus. And I know all of that because he told me about his being African-American and his Jewish faith and what he did in Israel. All of this on the ride home. But before he got to those stories, he told me this. He said, you know, I was on Bozo Circus as a kid. You know, and I've got the seatbelt on, and I think I'm going to get there. But this is the funniest guy. And he says, you know, I said, how'd you do on the grand prize game? He says, I got to bucket number 3, and that ball bounced out. And if you were ever lucky enough to, A, get on the show, and then, B, be one of those kids that got picked, that's just like a life memory. And here he is at 1 in the morning driving through a blizzard downtown Chicago telling a perfect stranger, still, years later, that he remembers that ball bouncing out of bucket number 3 and how tough that was. He's still carrying that around. I said, how did you even get to be there? He said they had an art competition for kids in the elementary schools of Chicago, and I won it 3 years in a row. Really good artist. And I that may be why he was actually selected to be the kid that threw the balls, or maybe that's just what got him on the show. But either way, he got to drop the balls in the buckets and didn't make it all of the way. Well, thank you, Roger Badish, for the heads up on that. We'll have to watch that on February 17th on Channel 9. On the Today Show the other day, and they had Mike Rowe, who is promoting a new Facebook show of his that airs Monday nights. What's the medium called? How do you watch this? This is like Facebook. What do you call it?
Facebook Watch.
So this is Facebook Watch. So if you have Facebook on your device, it sounds like they're producing their own programming? And it'll come up on Facebook?
Yeah. And that was today that he was on the Today Show.
Okay, so here's part of the Today Show interview with Mike Rowe.
Starting as a young kid, I think my dad put me to work as soon as I could pick up a hammer.
Jason and Laura Jansma and a team of volunteers are building something much bigger than they ever imagined. The inspiration came after they saw an episode of Mike Rowe's Facebook Watch show, Returning the Favor, featuring Luke Nicholson, an Idaho man who saw a need in his community and then took action.
Sleep in Heavenly Peace is an organization that builds bunk beds for kids that are otherwise sleeping on the floor or in really uncomfortable situations.
So you remember Mike Rowe, he's the guy that did that Dirty Jobs show where he would go out and do dirty jobs. He was really funny. It was kind of a new kind of reality TV show. And now he's got this Facebook program called Returning the Favor. Boy, could we use a show like that these days. And lo and behold, one of the groups that they featured on the Today Show today was an organization that I guess was created by Laura Jansma and her husband. Hey, Laura, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Really good. So, Sleep in Heavenly Peace, is that the name of the group?
Yes, that's correct.
And is that nationwide, or is that something you guys came up with here?
No, it's nationwide. It started in Twin Falls, Idaho, by Luke Mickelson and his wife.
I see. And what does that group do?
We build bunk beds for kids who are currently sleeping on the floor or some other form of situation.
Yeah. And so how did you first hear about that then? I mean, I'm hearing about this from this new show. How did you guys even find out about it?
That's exactly where we heard it from. My husband and I were searching around for different volunteer opportunities or possibly... And we came across Returning the Favor with Mike Rowe, and it was a segment on Sleep in Heavenly Peace, and as soon as we saw that video, we knew we had to get involved.
I see. So this was posted or went up some time ago then, huh?
Yeah, I would say about a year ago.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know he was doing that show, A, and B, I didn't know about this organization. I'm glad I'm catching up. So you guys have been doing this for a while then, huh?
Yeah.
I see. And so then you opened up a chapter, if you will. I mean, you guys started a branch of that organization here in the Chicago area.
Yep. Yeah, that's correct. My husband, he contacted Luke Mickelson in Idaho, and then from there out, we started our own chapter here in Chicagoland.
Good for you guys. So,
thank you.
So are you all carpenters? Is Jason handy? Are you handy? Do you guys know how to build stuff?
I am far from handy, but my husband, he's been doing construction with his dad, who is also a part of our team, since he was real young. So he's in the construction business as well.
Got it. What's the name of the company? What's the name of your husband's firm?
Krez Group.
Krez Group. Okay, let's give them a plug, A. So Krez Group, they do industrial or residential construction, that sort of thing?
Yeah, they're industrial. They're a flooring company, a decorative concrete flooring company.
I see. Okay, well, let's do some advertising here on WGN Radio. But in the meantime, then you guys said, okay, let's do this. And then how do you find the people that need better sleeping accommodations? Where did you find the people that needed bunk beds?
So people who need bunk beds will contact the website shpbeds.org, and they'll submit a request form for beds, however many they need, whether it's one or four.
I see.
And then, so right now we currently have over 5,000 kids waiting for beds in the Chicagoland area.
Are you kidding? Because when I heard that, I thought, is there really such a great need for beds for kids to sleep on?
Yeah. I mean, when we first started, it was maybe 80 at the most. And then just floods of requests came in, and now we're at over 5,000, yep.
Is it institutional, like the Salvation Army has a center and they need beds, or is it family by family?
It's family by family. We do fosters, we do anyone who needs a bed that is 3 to 17.
So then you guys reach, so then walk me through that. So there's a family that needs a bed, you guys are building beds, what happens then?
So we get a bunch of volunteers, we'll need funding for all the material. We'll get a build day together, and we'll build said beds, whether it's 10, 20, 30 beds. And then after that, we'll just go through the list of families that need it and, check them off one by one and deliver them one by one.
Do you build them to the specs of the homes and places where the people live, or is it a one-size-fits-all?
It's a one-size-fits-all. So Luke came up with the process that all of the chapters across the United States follow.
I see.
And it's just one set bunk bed that everybody knows how to build.
Yeah, right. Maybe that's... And then where are you getting the materials?
So our local Lowe's, they sometimes give us, a percentage wherever we can get it the cheapest.
Lumber, nails, screws, mat.
Yeah.
And then mattresses and bedding too, right?
Yeah, it comes complete with pillows, bedding, mattresses, everything they need to sleep in that bed that night.
On TV, it showed them making the bed with sheets. Do you provide that as well?
Yep, sheets.
Wow. Yeah. So literally, it's a one-stop shop. Here's the bed. Here's a pillow, here's a blanket, you're good to have a good night's sleep.
Yes, and they get to sleep in that bed that same night.
I'm telling you, the kids that they showed on TV, you know, we're all spoiled. You know, all of our kids have game controllers and bicycles. These kids were jumping into the bed and were so happy. The kid says, I get to sleep on a bed tonight. And he was, you know, a kid looked to be 12, 15 years old, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You don't realize the need for something like this until, you know, you're dealing with it, like my husband and I and our team and everybody else.
So then you all deliver the beds to where? Is it suburbs? Is it south and west side? Where do you go?
Yeah, it's southwest. It's the south suburbs. It's just the Chicagoland area.
Yeah. And these families, maybe they're being directed. I mean, I don't know how tapped in they are to know shp.org, sleepinheavenlypeace.org. I wonder if local agencies are cluing them into the existence of you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're hoping for. With Although, that many requests, we need all the help that we can get.
Yeah, well, I guess it works both ways. I'm thinking about the people who need the beds, but we should go to shp.org to either donate supplies and money or maybe get you more manpower, right?
Yeah, yeah, we can't provide these beds for the kids without having the funds and the build days, you know.
There's a great organization called Feed My Starving Children, and they do pack days where they have food and they pack it in boxes and then they ship it to starving children around the world. It's amazingly efficient and streamlined, and they do pack days. They'll come to companies or schools and they'll all do a group pack, or the company or school go to the place and do it. Do you have a central location where you build the beds?
Just anywhere that's allowing us to use their space. The video that you saw was in our local fire department in St. John, and we were able to do a big build day with about 20 plus volunteers.
Okay, but if I wanted you to come to the Manuka Community Center or some other a warehouse in Chicago, would you guys bring the saws and the drills and we would all come? How does that happen?
Yep, yeah, we'll come anywhere that you guys will allow us to build beds, and we'll bring all the equipment, all the volunteers, all the, you know, the lumber, everything, to be able to build as many beds as you allow us.
So what you're looking for today is people to do that, or do you need the money and supplies as well?
No, we have the supplies. We need the money for the materials for the bunk beds. We have all the, you know, the saws and all that good stuff. We need the volunteers. And we need the funds to keep building as many beds as we can.
Shoot, it looks, I hate to say this, looks kind of fun to construct the beds.
It is.
Build.
And the most rewarding is the deliveries. Deliveries are amazing. It's wonderful to see how impacted these kids are on something that we take for granted every day.
How can I reach out to you guys locally then? What's the best way to do that?
We have a Facebook page. It's the it's Sleep in Heavenly Peace Chicagoland chapter. Or you can go on shpbeds.org and choose our Chicagoland chapter to donate, to volunteer, to contact us, whatever you need.
Good for you. Has the site been busy?
It has. It has. Especially since the Today Show, everything's kind of, you know, but yeah.
Okay, SHP Beds, Sleep in Heavenly Peace, shpbeds.org, shpbeds.org, or check out the Facebook page. Go to Facebook and type in the search bar, Sleep in Heavenly Peace, Chicagoland chapter, and then get those damn kids of yours up and over, or get the Lions Club or the Parents Club, get any the Boy Scouts. I mean, the possibilities are endless for manpower.
Yeah.
Well, God bless Jason and his company. What's the name of that firm again that you guys have, Laura?
Krez Group, Barrier Corp, yeah.
Got it. And Laura Jansma, who are involved in this. Well, I hope you get more chapters locally, and I hope you get more people and money. Let's stay in touch, and if we can do something for you down the road, Laura, you make sure you let us know, okay?
We will. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis, and company are all in Studio A. Hi, guys. How's it
we
going?
We are indeed. We just spit polished Studio A.
Nice.
Got it all ready.
Nice.
Because we have a halftime show that we're going to do at 5 o'clock today, and it's very exciting. Anna just told me that she's getting the exact sleeve that
Adam Levine.
That Adam Levine, also a Chicago Bulls player, if I'm not mistaken, was wearing last night. You know what? When he went totally shirtless, did everybody have that exact same thought? Like, why did he just do that?
Yeah, kind of like it felt like it was trying too hard.
I wanted to spend more time with that shirt. The shirt was trending.
Right, people said it looked like their pillow. It was a weird. He had like a whole thing going on. He was dressed like Christopher from The Sopranos for a while.
Yeah,
you know, it was like with the chains and the whole thing. You're like, nah, just because Big Boy's coming out does not, or Travis Scott or whatever.
Big Boy in the fur.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean you have to wear chains. You don't have to. You're not a rapper. Nobody thinks you're a rapper. You're on The Voice. Nobody. Come on, your chair spins around.
I started to wonder if being the halftime entertainer at the Super Bowl is going to go the way of being the MC for, say, the Oscars.
Yes.
Nobody wants that job because you can't win. You can never
no
be good enough.
Yeah, unless you are the Stones or the Who or Paul McCartney or Prince. You're already a classic act that nobody can.
Right.
You know, you got a body of work that people love, and there's
if you're not
to do
so great, they go, yeah, but it's Paul McCartney. Shut up. But they don't do that. Adam Levine doesn't get that.
Right. Right. He's literally a reality show host or a reality show judge. That's what he's more famous for.
Oh, really?
He's got a great voice, it didn't work.
I'm outraged by that statement. I'm leaving. Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right.
Storming out of here. John Williams.